the Mac Attack.
Oh, well, low strike. Told me to swing it back.
Oh, I should have went change up. Oh, I'll take the heater away.
Sanchez, a high fly ball to right center.
Make a play, Witt. Make a play, Witt.
The wall, it is gone. Blackman, his first All-Star game hit. It's a home run and a 2-1 game. And it's a 3-1 ball game. Two-run game again. And here is Gallo, and there it goes. Home run, Joey Gallo.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell.
He didn't wait around. And a two-run game becomes a three-run game. It's 4-1 here in the All-Star game in the seventh. Chapman does that. And he's got him. Struck out the side. And a smile from Aroldis Chapman as he gets the All-Star game save. And the American League has now won seven straight as they win this one 4-3.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Yeah, let's go Las Vegas here on this Wild Card Wednesday edition of the Mac Attack. You heard it there in the open. The All-Star game was last night. Maybe not as exciting as what was a historic home run derby on Monday. It was great. It was fun. It was a good time. And last night was fun. American League, you heard it there in the open. Seven consecutive wins in the All-Star game, which no longer counts. Thank God. Nick nodding in complete agreement. Right? What was that? It was like 13 years they did that or something. I think it was like from 2002 to like 2016, 2003 to 2000, something like that.
How they ever thought that would make the All-Star game more like, the players are going to care because whoever wins it, that conference or that whatever gets the
division. Yeah.
Gets home field advantage or whatever for the World Series.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's like a knee-jerk reaction.
And what has been the story of the week here on the Mac Attack in terms of baseball, knee-jerk reactions and being reactionary. But that was cool last night. Shane Bieber, Cleveland Indian pitcher, gets to hold up the MVP trophy. He walks away with those honors. He was actually a late addition to this team on Friday. He just found out he was going to be an All-Star list, and there wasn't a whole lot to choose from, I suppose. He could have went with maybe Mr. Vegas over there. You heard of Joey Gallo putting one in the stands. He had a couple big hits, but you know Bieber had the crowd. He struck out all three when he was in the game. He struck out everyone that he faced, and the crowd was behind him chanting, you know, "Let's go Shane" or whatever they were chanting there. So I get it. It was it was a good night. I still like that stuff. I'm a sucker for award shows. I'm a sucker for All-Star games. I watch all that stuff. The ESPYs are tonight. I'm going to be watching that. I like stuff like that.
I definitely enjoyed I don't know if this is new because I don't remember last year's All-Star game. Maybe I did or didn't watch it, but the interaction with Joe Buck and the players field.
When all those Astros were in the outfield?
It was just all of it. I really liked when he talked to Francisco Lindor and Bellinger in the field with Blackman too. And that was fun.
That's how you build stars.
And that
personality.
And that's also, you build the stars, and that's also, that's building the stars because you're getting the viewers to get a look in. I can't speak today. To get the inside look to your players and camera time and putting the product, like I've talked about this before, putting the product in front of the people as much as you can.
Absolutely.
And that interaction as much as you can.
Yeah.
And I thought it came off really great.
It really did. And it as is the point that you're making, it highlighted the personalities of the players. And yeah, I know some of them are vanilla, no pun intended. We're talking about, baseball players, right? But You gotta push them sometimes, right? But the place that you're gonna find ballers in their element, the best place to find them and to get them to open up and to see that, charisma is on the field. Now, I understand you can't do it all the time because games matter. This one so happened to not matter. But it was a nice addition. And yeah, I think they've been doing it for a little while. Joe Buck's been he's been making it a thing. And, it translated last night. I brought up all the Astros that were in the outfield. They were having there was a great conversation when Bregman was out there and Springer got a ball hit to him and they were talking him through chasing down the ball. Like, oh, you missed that one, George. I mean, that's the type of stuff that we don't get a window into. And I think it's the stuff, as you mentioned, as sports fans, as baseball fans, we tend to enjoy. So I am back from Summer League. Was there Monday and Tuesday? Well, Friday, Monday, and Tuesday.
You're back out there on Friday, right?
I'll be back out there on Friday, absolutely. It's been fairly eventful. It's been a good time down there. Obviously, plenty more to go. The finals will be happening on Monday. Semifinals on Sunday. I'm going to go out there as a fan on Sunday to catch the semifinals. Don't know if I'm going to make the finals, but still a lot of games. We're still in the multiple game, you know, and that really goes up till Sunday. The semifinals is two games. So pretty much every day up until Monday, you're going to have multiple games, but specifically today, Thursday, Friday, all that good stuff. Plenty more to be had at Summer League. And speaking of Summer League, I mentioned this a little bit yesterday, but we finally got confirmation. This Saturday, down at GameWorks, right off there in Town Square, right at the south end of the boulevard, we're going to be going down there. Nick's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Everyone from 920 The Game's going to be there. Everyone from Lotus Broadcasting is going to be there. We're having a GameWorks Summer League party. It's going to start at 6 o'clock, okay? We're going to have prizes. We're going to have full-day game passes we're going to be giving away. We're going to be having tickets that we're going to be giving away, shirts. As I mentioned, I think we may want some Summer League tickets. Not sure on Knights tickets. I don't think we have those yet, so I can't say we're going to be doing that. But we're going to have tickets, prizes, giveaways, and all that good stuff. And everyone from ESPN Las Vegas is going to be there, 920 The Game, Fox Sports. We're going to have analysts. We're going to have some NBA players. It is going to be a great time. That is, as again, GameWorks going down at 6 o'clock this Saturday is just essentially going to be a Summer League party. We're going to be celebrating what is now the 15th year of Summer League. So if you're out here, if you're just visiting, come down and say hi. If you're a local and you listen to the show and you want to come and hang out with myself and the guys at ESPN Las Vegas, think Steve Cofield's going to make an appearance. There's going to be plenty of people down there. We're going to be having a lot of fun playing video games. And I said this yesterday. All right, I'm an online player, so I like to play like Madden Ultimate Team. I like playing NHL 2019 Hockey Ultimate Team, HUT. I like Diamond Dynasty and MLB. So if you want to come and challenge me in some of those games, you have to bring your best game because I am no pushover. I know you hear me every day talking on the radio, but when I'm not talking on the radio, you know, I'm prepping. I'm doing my sports thing, but a great way for prep, I'm telling you, a great thing for prep, Nick, is video games. Should I know that Chris Sale has a four-seamer, a two-seamer, a changeup, and a slider? No. But why do I know that? Well, because I play MLB The Show every day, and I got to face Sale occasionally. You got to know what they're bringing. You got to know the velocity. Got to know how many innings they can go.
I should give you a nickname, Popeye Thumbs.
Popeye Thumbs.
Popeye Thumbs.
I like it. Yeah. Or just Popeye. They're like, what are you talking about? You're not strong. Well, no, it's my thumbs. It's everything other than the things
thumb
that matter.
Warrior.
Yeah, the thing that actually matters.
I'm going to bring my 15-year-old out.
There you go.
He loves NHL. He plays basketball as well.
Good. I'll go humble him.
Madden, so
yeah,
I'm gonna have to start practicing with him and get my skills back up.
Is this the 15-year-old that's bigger than you are?
He is not bigger than me. He will not be bigger than me for at least a few more years. He's about 5'10", maybe.
You're like easy. He's not a giant yet.
He's taller than his mother, but that's not hard. She's only 5'2". So he is getting there. He's almost as tall as me.
Well, it's a wild card Wednesday. Speaking of tall, did you see the short guy in the I want to say it was a New York bagel spot?
Yes.
Yeah, it went viral this morning. I feel like everyone's seen it by now.
It's like the Malik McDowell video, the football player who got arrested out in Michigan.
Yeah, well, speaking of wanting that smoke, little man wanted that smoke. For those that didn't see it, we don't have it chopped up because there was a lot of swearing, but there's a very short man, and what I'm thinking is an East Coast baker. I'm totally going off the accent. I'm assuming he's from New York or Jersey.
Something like that. And it's very serious out there with bagels.
I was very serious about bagels. People just want their bagels. And he went into a tirade about being a short guy. We only see like midway through the video, but he's like, girls are always crapping on me.
Yeah,
they're
he's talking about
online
like Tinder.
Dating. They're making this face and everyone brings up my height. F you, and F you. You want some of this? You want some of this? Then he starts bumping chests with one patron. The patron's like, dude, what are you doing?
It's almost like a joke.
Right,
like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's like, why are you touching me? And then the short guy points at another patron. He's like, you want some too? I'll beat your ass also.
Yeah, he's like, you want to go outside?
Yeah.
You want to go outside? He's like, no, I'll just take you right here.
he swallows him. Poor short guy gets absolutely manhandled on the ground. His little feet are kicking out underneath him. He's got nowhere to go. He's like a turtle and get turned over on his back.
That was pretty funny.
That was funny. Well, we got lots of good stories. This Wild Card Wednesday. I should mention, coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to be joined by Nick Gizmondi from AT&T Sportsnet, your voice of the Golden Knights pre-post and intermission games. So, Nick Gizmondi coming up shortly, but as I mentioned, it's Wild Card Wednesday. It's time for opening round. Let's do it.
It's the opening round.
Finish him.
Brought to you by VIP Collision.
Well, it wouldn't be a Wild Card Wednesday story without a robot story. As you know, here on the Mac Attack, we're very concerned about the oncoming robot apocalypse, the inevitability of what would have all our future existence is going to be, bowing and acquiescing to our robot overlords.
When the light bulb goes off, why am I listening to a human?
Am I human? Who's to say I'm not AI right now? I could be AI. You don't know that. You haven't cut my hand open like Schwarzenegger in T2.
I was just about to say I need to get a dog in here. But you have a dog,
yeah,
so
wait
that
a minute.
Just backfires.
Is there a school of thought that thinks dogs can sniff out AI and robots?
Well, that is from Terminator.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Miles, whatever his name is.
Miles Benedict? No.
Close.
Miles Dyson?
Miles Dyson! Yes! Way to go. That was his name. But look at that memory recall.
No, it was in the very beginning of the movie. The dogs sniff out the robots.
Oh, that's right.
Well, not maybe at the very beginning, but...
I know what you meant. When they flash back.
Yes.
Robots could take over 20 million jobs by 2030, a report from NBC News.
2030?
2030.
Oh, okay. I thought what you sent me was 2020, so that's at least good. That's another 11 years.
Yeah, we got 11 years until we, you know, need to start actively worrying about
20 million people not having a job.
Right, exactly.
But that's got to be automation at the bottom barrel level, right? Like we're already starting to see cashiers at Smith's and McDonald's and other such with the ordering kiosk and the
right.
self-serve checkout.
Right. Now, this is from a study from Oxford. I said, well, within the next 11 years, as I said, 2030.
Well, you got to read it in a British accent now.
Well,
it came from Oxford.
Well, is it hit and do the show?
It's the robots.
The robots are going to take over, take all the jobs.
That's going to be terrible.
Could do it in Chicago. Could do the rest of the show talking like this. Get the accents going and start breaking down the analytics. Talk to Nick Gismondi coming up here in about 15 minutes. That'd be cool.
We had Nick on TC's show, and TC was like, that's Italian, right? And the two of them started busting out Italian voices.
God.
So,
what is this plague of bad radio just seeping in through the LBC?
What am I listening to, guys? The terrible accents.
Our bad accents. It's looking like definitely lower-skilled jobs, but, I mean, lower-skilled jobs, I feel like that's...
It's the start of it.
It's the start of it. I know a lot of people with, quote-unquote, lower-skilled jobs. Servers, you know?
Well, and no joking here, when I first got into radio in 1998, they talked about automation, and we already have it, is sitting in front of me. This computer is automated, and people can just completely automate this computer, right? Well, they talked about this in 1998, where basically one guy, say like Central in Kansas, could operate multiple radio stations for, say, one company throughout the network,
sure.
Throughout the country.
Right.
It hasn't happened to maybe that level yet, but we do see it, network and such like that. So, yes, automation has crept in, but maybe not to the point where we were threatened with it years and years ago. Just with radio, I'm saying.
Yeah, with radio. But when you talk about the threat in general,
automation is everywhere.
It's actually increased. And instead, according to the report, the number of robots installed in workplaces in the last 4 years is the same number put to work over the other 8 years combined.
Say it again.
Okay. The number of robots installed in workplaces over the last 4 years is the exact same number put to work over the prior 8 years combined.
Got it. So they've doubled, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, I don't doubt it. I mean, it's only going to get more and more. We saw police robots roaming the streets of like some Southern California neighborhood in the parks and such
the
and
good
stuff
news,
like that.
The good news is it's affecting China much more than it's affecting us because approximately every third robot in the industry is now installed in China.
Well, I
so
mean,
actually, I don't know if that's good. China's kicking our ass in terms of production and manufacturing and a bunch of other ways. So, I mean, automation is good. It is. But my whole thing with this has always been, how are you going to find, when you displace all these people from the workplace, not all of them are going to be able to work on the robots. They're not going to have skills that are going to be able, so you're going to have pretty much a lost generation of workers with no skills equipped to transition into whatever they're going to do next. And for me, that's problematic because they are, as we talked about, low-skilled workers or lower skilled workers. When you're talking about the service industry or low skill, I hate the way that's worded in the article.
Maybe more like not college educated,
yeah,
basically.
And even then, I mean, I know people that have college degrees that are serving, you know, because they make more money doing that, especially in Las Vegas, than they would anywhere else. But if robots are serving, or if it's kiosks where you go up and you order yourself. Anyway, something to think about. It's a case I've made before. You know, I'd really like to see things put in place to where we could transition slowly. We acknowledge that automation is coming and robots will be policemen and firemen and servers and really everything. They could be everything. I mean, just about everything.
If you look back at the history, Henry Ford was applauded or whatever. He's a genius because he invented the automation for the car industry, yeah. Right? I mean, just think about how that has changed over the years, and robots has definitely changed. So,
well, the thing I would say about that is when Ford or whoever, you know, pushed automation in terms of automobiles and factories.
That was humans.
And the Industrial Revolution, right. But those humans were able to transition into many other different jobs. You know what I mean? They were able to use their skills in the 40s and 50s and 60s, whatever it may be, and still transition. I don't know.
Look at Detroit now.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. 40s, 50s, 60s. Detroit was still thriving.
Yeah.
You could go out and get a job in Detroit because your skills translated and there were many jobs that you could choose from. Now they're just not there.
Yeah, because they took them all away.
Exactly. You could go be a bank teller. You're going to go do this. You're going to go work at the supermarket.
And automation is creeping in there.
Absolutely. And that's kind of my point, is it's creeping in everywhere. So we're doing our due diligence here on Wildcard Wednesday.
I saw something a while ago. Mark Cuban talked about the future of automation and robots and all this such. And the one key I took away from it was he talked about even coding, you know, something that humans have been doing, mm-hmm. is writing the computer code and all that such. Well, that, he said, is a future that you might not want to get your kids into, because
robots could just
that
do
is going to be automated
wow.
soon. So like he was basically saying how the jobs of the future are going to be where human, like, opinion, you know, like writing.
Right,
like,
and I actually heard from the Associated Press that in terms of deadline writing, they yeah. have a bot, they have a machine, they have an AI formed that where, I read this a few years ago, that you plugged in six or seven, the who, what, when, where, and why.
And like, it can write a story
And
for
it can
you.
Write a story with, like, something. I'm not going to be accurate with this, but it was astonishing numbers. Something like 800% less mistakes, mm-hmm. and in, like, four times the speed. That is terrifying.
Yeah.
If you're a deadline writer.
And the fact that as the reader, you might not realize you're not even reading a human opinion.
Know.
You're reading a robot-generated spit-out type of garbage.
And trust me, they don't care. That's one thing I learned about my time at Yahoo Sports. Listen, the pay doesn't reflect the output because the readership doesn't care about quality. If the people that are reading your pieces don't care about time and effort and nuance and storytelling, and you're not going to get paid for it.
And it's hard, I would imagine, you would know this of all people, trying to get your personality across on written in a written form
it's
as opposed
different.
To...
I mean, it's different because that wasn't my job at Yahoo. I wasn't writing op-eds. That would be Kevin Ioli, my colleague over at Yahoo, who I know a lot of people know. He's a Las Vegas.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that translates. But you're right. It is, you know, it's not conducive to a guy like me who obviously clearly has a lot of opinions and I like to share them. And
think about radio. Yeah. I mean, we already have now, like, you go on to the web and you can, like, what is this word? And you click the little button and it'll say it for you.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, computer voices are already coming along,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but they'll never be able to do our job.
No, and that's where I was going to say is, like, it'll just kind of be like this monotone, and I don't think you can actually throw inflection into your voice and do those things. So hopefully our jobs are still somewhat safe for the near future.
Yeah, come and get me, robot. I see you, Skynet. You ain't got nothing on
you
me.
You could be that little bagel guy. I see you. What? You want some of me?
That's right, yeah. What? What?
You want to go outside?
Then you end up on your face with your little baby legs dangling in the
Skynet's coming for
Leave
you
me
indoors.
Alone. Leave me alone. Headline. U.S. Customs just seized a ship owned by J.P. Morgan after authorities found $1 billion worth of cocaine on it.
You say billion or million?
Bill.
Billion. Holy moly.
As in bowling ball.
That's a lot of coke.
That's actually a fun fact. That is just for the J.P. Morgan New York office.
So it was busted on a J.P.
Morgan-owned
ship.
Yes, correct. In the port of Philadelphia, which, if you remember, we talked about it on this show a couple weeks ago, another ship, not owned, to my best of my knowledge, not owned by J.P. Morgan, was found with almost $1 billion worth of cocaine on it.
Wow.
My question is, Nick, how are we going to build the wall in the Atlantic Ocean? Because the wall, everything they told me, Nick, is that all the drugs come from Mexico. That's why we got to build the wall. We got to stop the flow of drugs and the mules and all that stuff. Meanwhile, in the span of 1 month, we've had close to $2 billion worth of snow picked up in the port of Philadelphia.
Philly.
This one owned by J.P. Morgan.
Those damn white guys.
Pretty much, dude. People are like, oh, it's the brown people bringing in coke from Mexico.
We've known this for years. I mean, we've known this for many, many years. It's a very crooked, crooked thing that we are led to believe.
I feel like you need a ship to house $1 billion worth of cocaine. That is a lot of cocaine.
I'm just also thinking what that's doing to the street prices right now of cocaine over in the East Coast and everywhere else.
You try to take advantage of the
Well, I've already told you this. Shortage. I don't know if I ever said it on the radio. I'll say it now. I my parents didn't see 60, and if I ever see 60, I'm going to party hardy, and I might do my first ever line of coke. I'm just saying.
We've actually talked about that, what we've done and what we haven't done in our life. You've never done cocaine. And good for you.
And thank you. It was the drug. What did DARE stand for anyway? What was the A? I don't remember. It was resistance education. Resistance education. But I never remember what the damn A was. But yeah. DARE kind of actually worked for me.
It worked for me.
I just was like, you know what? I don't want to do coke.
Yeah. We would talk about it. People would offer, you're an adult, things happen. I would say, yeah, I don't want to be an after school special.
Right.
It was like literally like, it did work. Didn't work for other things, but it definitely worked for cocaine.
And it's also, I guess it would be ironic maybe, the fact that we're talking about coke being brought in by other pretty much rich.
Super rich white people that didn't listen to DARE.
And guess who started DARE?
Super rich white people.
The Ronald Reagan and the guy who was also behind like shipping stuff against the cartels. And,
you're talking about Oliver North and Noriega and that whole good stuff.
Just a whole bunch of, yeah.
Freeway Ricky Ross out in California.
Yeah, all that good stuff. Yeah. Just a whole bunch of American great history that
USA. This is a lot of drugs, man.
You know what? Maybe we should get robots to smuggle drugs into America, and that would be they would do a better job of it. Artificial intelligence smuggling cocaine and other things into America.
Could just get like little fly drones and just have them like with little packets. Not like $1 billion in one shipment, just an onslaught of drones.
Just raining coke?
Yep. It's a raining coke.
Could be raining other things too.
Speaking of drones, you didn't see the new Spider-Man, did you?
No.
Okay.
Have you?
Yeah. I'm going to plug it on that. I'm just going to leave it. It's real good.
I heard it's good.
It's real good.
So they play off the fact that this is already after the Avengers Endgame.
It's a continuation of Endgame and the passing and all the things that happen in Endgame. I don't want to give too many spoilers.
Yeah.
No, it's really good stuff.
It's nice to know that they don't just completely abandon that whole story and go off onto like Peter Parker.
No, it's good. It's a continuation. Lots of heart and some drones. A good villain for today's 2019. Landscape, if you will.
Are they doing Carnage 2 or Venom with Carnage?
I don't know
what's
going on with that. Because, right, at the end of that, we saw Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson is supposed to be Carnage. Yeah. And that was Sony.
Yep.
And who knows? Man.
I got nothing for you on that. I hope so. We've been waiting for it.
You know, this just goes to show that Disney really does a lot of things better.
100%. I was talking about this with someone that...
I know Steve, our engineer here, he said he's worked for Disney, and he was going on and on about how great Disney is and the company. He's like, I don't know about Disneyland nowadays, but the company overall has always stood for excellence and such. Yeah. Like, and you think about it, and you're like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I mean, like the product that they put out. I mean, like think about it. The X-Men trilogy, we talked about this, or not the trilogy, the whole series. Why X-Men came out back in like 1998 before the Marvel series did, and it got crushed. It just got crushed by Iron Man 2008 and moving forward.
In terms of
popularity, quality.
I mean, those X-Men movies were popular.
They were, but that's because they hadn't had anything else up against them.
They were only show on block,
exactly.
Right.
And Batman Dark Knight, that is still, I think, a great, great one.
Yeah,
but again, Disney took a hold of the Marvel series comic book, and they showed what we all can expect from
that's
it.
Right. And Coke to their Pepsi. Actually, I'm a Pepsi guy, but whatever, Mike. You're absolutely correct.
Give those writers some Coke. They did a good job.
Yeah, there you go. Reward. Just go get out to Philadelphia. We got a packing slip for you. Just go take the ship. Wow. I guess good for you, J.P. Morgan. I don't know.
J.P. Morgan is not investing well in something.
Yeah, right? No wonder how they got all that money. They're cocaine dealers. All right, listen, that is enough for Wild Card Wednesday. We're going to put a plug on it. We're going to actually move over to some sports talk because coming up next here on the Mac Attack, you heard him on AT&T Sportsnet, Rocky Mountain. You've also heard him plenty on this show. He is one of the voices of your Vegas Golden Knights, and he is Nick Gizmondi. And he's coming up next here on the Mac Attack.
One more season. You can see they re-signed him.
It's the Mac Attack.
Ceiling is high still for Malcolm Subban there. I know the goaltending coach, Dave Pryor, really liked Malcolm Subban. They picked him up off waivers, and the contract is very friendly for a Vegas Golden Knights team that has got to be worried about contracts with their cap situation right now.
The Mac Attack.
Yeah, it may be the offseason here in Vegas Golden Knightlands, but that doesn't mean we are not a hockey town. And to talk a little hockey, you know, things are a little slower, but we got things moving and shaking here in the hockey world. We got our pal Nick Gizmondi stopping by. Nick, what's up, buddy?
Hey, man, how we doing?
We're doing. We're living, man. Mr. Emmy-nominated Nick Gizmondi, I should remind everyone. So how's the offseason, man? I see you're doing a lot. You're doing stuff with the professional tennis league. You're staying busy. I saw you out there with Red Foo. You're keeping a high profile.
I'm having fun. You know what? It's I'm like a shark. I got to keep moving, right? So I don't really like it. It's the first time. So I spent... Before I came to Vegas, I spent the last 12 years at NBC Sports Network. Right. So I had always been doing something, right? Like when one season ended, it picked up with another season. So this was a weird one for me. I wasn't sure quite what was going to happen. You know, I had obviously an amazing time doing the Golden Knights, but I wasn't sure what the off season looked like. I kind of just thought it was going to be a lot of golf, and I'm playing a bunch of golf. But I was hoping to pick some stuff up quickly, and luckily enough. CBS Sports Network came to me pretty much right when the season ended with Vegas and asked if I'd be interested in just hanging out with them for the summer. And I said, yeah. And so I actually am going to be doing the World Team Tennis broadcast season for them on CBS Sports Network and on CBS, too. So
cool.
Me and LZ Granderson and Red Foo are doing a bunch of broadcasts starting this Saturday in New York City. So... It's gonna be sick. Red Foo is actually the assistant coach for the Vegas version of World Team Tennis. So the Vegas Rollers are playing out of the Orleans Casino. So I'm gonna be doing a bunch of those games on CBS, and Red Foo is the assistant coach there. So it'll be interesting. It's gonna be a fun season, but it's gonna be rip roaring. I think I leave home on the 14th, and I don't return back until like August 4th.
Whoa. All right. Well,
yeah.
At least you're staying busy, like you said.
Yeah,
moving like a shark.
Like a shark. Moving,
right.
Buddy. Moving.
All right. So,
away with murder when you don't get cross-checked.
Yeah, right. All right. Hey-o. So as we talk a little tennis, I should bring up that this Friday Wimbledon's going down, and again, man, Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer are meeting. This is going to be the first time they've met at Wimbledon since that historic match they had in 2008. Listen, I'm a casual tennis fan, Nick, but I am going to tune in for that. I would imagine you will be as well.
I'm a huge tennis fan,
right?
And I think it's going to be exceptional. Those guys are obviously such legends, and they're going to battle it out on the grass in Wimbledon. And I was there for the beginning of Wimbledon for CBS, and, man, that place has just got some lore to it.
Oh, I would imagine,
you walk
yeah.
in on the grounds there, and you walk out the center court, and you're just... It just kind of hits you. If you're a sports fan, you know the holy grounds of sports, certainly Augusta, certainly Wimbledon, obviously some arenas around the NHL that belong to original six teams. Obviously, they're not the original six buildings, but, you know, there's just some lore, man, and Wimbledon is certainly one of them, and it's cool. And to see that matchup go down there, it's going to be epic. There's some great stories coming out of there. I mean, Coco Gauff, unbelievable. The 15-year-old, like, what
yeah.
a run she went on. And the World Team Tennis stars are all going to be in the mix still. The Bryan brothers, obviously, they're playing for the Vegas team. The Rollers, Sam Querrey's going to be there. So it's like another stop on the tennis circuit for these guys. So it should be a ton of fun.
Well, there you go. We're here with super tennis expert and fan, Nick Gizmondi. But hey, we know what we know you for, Nick, and that is for the Vegas Golden Knights. First of all, in terms of Knights land, big news, big news coming down yesterday that Malcolm Subban has avoided any sort of arbitration or any sort of hanging on. He has a deal. It's coming in at about $850,000. My question to you is, Nick, listen, this team still has to, you know, they still want to resign to England. You look at there's still contracts to be made. Obviously, Nikita Gusev is the elephant in the room. What do you think happens with all of this moving and shaking for the rest of this offseason? What are the Knights going to do?
Man, I don't know. I think George McPhee has always got himself a plan. There's no question about it. And he's always managed to do the right thing at the right time. So, the Gusev thing is interesting. I think they want to hang on to a guy like him. I think it's in their best interest, too. But I think the price has got to be right and everything has got to kind of sort of line up because the team, the way it's shaped right now, is deep. They've got a really great system. I mean, they've got a really great system in Chicago with the Wolves, the development and the process that these kids are going through, and the pipeline is very, very strong. So, if they lose a guy, I don't think it's a big deal. And listen, at the beginning of free agency, one of the things that McPhee pointed out was that, listen, there's going to be young guys on this roster next year. Guys that played in the Wolves organization are going to have a chance to crack this lineup, and you're going to have to get used to seeing that. And I think that the fact that that's a possibility says that everything that Vegas is doing has been the right way. They've developed the right way. They've drafted the right way. Think about the Detroit Red Wings back in the late 90s, 96, 98, all the way through 2008. That was a really good hockey organization because Ken Holland drafted and had the pipeline going so well. When they lost a guy, some young guy that you had barely heard of comes into the mix and makes a splash and makes an impact. McPhee has done essentially the same thing with McCrimmon. These two have masterfully filled the pipeline with development, and no matter what happens in their lineup, because you're inevitably going to lose older guys, they've got somebody that's going to step up and fill that role who's proven himself in the AHL. So I think the Vegas Golden Knights are in really good shape, and I think their core's locked up for a while, so I think they're in really good shape for a really long time.
As we talk about that new blood, and we're here with Nick Gizmondi, voice of the Vegas Golden Knights for AT&T Sportsnet Rocky Mountain. Listen, I wanted to ask you a question, and since we, you know, kind of got to it, I think this is as good a time as any. So we talk about that new blood. I want to ask you a question. Zach Whitecloud, Nick Cade, Cody Glass, if you had to pick one of them, who do you think is in a Vegas Golden Knights uniform next season?
Glass.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's shown a ton of promise in the AHL. I think everything that he's done leading up to where he's at has been very good. I like the development of this kid. I think the temperament is right, and I think the personality, all those guys' personality is right. And I mention that because I can't say how important that is for this organization, right? They stress that constantly. Guys that they're putting into the room are guys that fit the MO, fit the personality, fit the family matter, and I think everybody that's coming up does that. But man, I really love the way Cody Glass is playing.
In terms of skill, what makes you think that Cody Glass is ready for this next level?
I think Cody Glass sees the ice really well. I think he's obviously a playmaker, but I think he's got the IQ, and a hockey IQ is a big thing, right? Especially with the guys that the Vegas Golden Knights already have into the mix. You need to plug a guy in that's got good hockey IQ. He's going to see the rink well. Isn't going to panic in terms of seeing full time in the NHL. It's a speed change. No matter how good you are, when you make that jump from major junior to the AHL or the AHL to the NHL, or even going back farther and take a guy from junior to the AHL to the NHL, there's a noticeable speed jump, and you just have to be thinking quicker, you have to be reacting faster, and I think that Cody Glass has adapted well to that at every level that he's made a move at, and I think he'll do the same when he moves from where he's at right now to the NHL.
All right, now obviously there's a lot of conversation surrounding Nikita Gusev. The reports are, that Gusev's looking for something $4 million a year on average. Knights are looking more like two. Figure maybe meet somewhere in the middle at three. But listen, Nick, there's a lot of people, and I gotta agree that I'm one of them. You know, $4 million for what Gusev probably is and what he's probably going to bring to this team, not for just next year, but in the future, it doesn't seem like that much of a stretch to me. Where where would you place Gusev's value if you had to put on your GM or your manager, your agent hat, if you will?
I don't like that question. I know you have to ask it, but I don't pretend to be George McPhee. That guy's a genius. So are we.
Yeah,
Crimmins,
it's true.
So
he's got a proven track record, right?
I leave the money and those kinds of decisions up to them. And truthfully, I haven't seen enough of Gusev to say, hey, listen, this guy's worth this. You could ask me that question about a bunch of other guys that I've seen play and seen prove themselves at the NHL level, and I'd argue tooth and nail for a guy to make $5 million or $4 million. I just don't know where it's at with Gusev. And if there's anybody that does know it, it's George McPhee. And I think that he's proven, him and McCrimmon, that they can make the right decisions with the right guys at the right time and see what they get out of them. They did it last year with Carlson.
Right.
They've done it with Brandon Peary. So my answer, and I know it's a little bit of the company line, and I'm telling it here, is whatever those guys think the money they should pay him is, that's the money they should pay him.
Well, here's one for you, and this is more a finger on the pulse of, you know, kind of Golden Knightland out there, right? And I know you talk to the fans a lot. You see the reception that you get on social media. I know you're a big pillar of the community in that regard. I had this conversation on Tyler Bischoff's show yesterday on ESPN 1100, and he asked me, you know, what would get the bigger blowback, trading Nikita Gusev or trading Ryan Reeves? And Nick, I immediately answered with Ryan Reeves, strictly because of how beloved the man is in the city. And listen, I'm not saying there aren't people that are excited for Nikita Gusev. They are, but the fact you mentioned it, Nick, we haven't seen Nikita Gusev, right? We've seen plenty of Ryan Reeves. He's got his brewing company. You know, everyone knows Revo. So I will ask that question to you. If the Vegas Golden Knights traded one of them, Gusev or Reeves, which one do you think would be worse in terms of fan blowback?
I mean, Ryan Reeves.
Right?
I think that underestimating the importance to the community is silly. Listen, when I came into Vegas last year, the most important thing for me was to be a part of the community, because I knew how much they were a part of the team.
Right.
And I felt an obligation to make sure that I was a part of it, which is why I spent all of Nevada Reading Week with the kiddos, and I skated with the Junior Golden Knights, and I've done a lot of other things that, you know, I don't need to say publicly that I just do, because that's the move, right? That's
sure.
That's what it means to be part of this organization. It means being involved in the community and taking care of them as much as they've taken care of the organization and us. So I've never felt more welcome in a town in my life than I have felt in Vegas this past year, and it's why I'm looking forward to being a part of it for years and years and years to come. Like, I don't want to go anywhere. I love it here. So I would say that Ryan Reeves embodies the exact same thing, and in fact, he said the same thing.
Yep.
One of the reasons why Ryan Reeves loves it so much in Vegas is because of the community and because of the team and the organization and the management and the family. And I don't think you can get rid of a guy like that. I think it's important to have a guy like Ryan Reeves, who not only is your protector on the ice, but also just an incredible human being in the community, does the things the right way, takes care of the people, and recognizes that. So, yeah, you can't get rid of Ryan Reeves. No way.
I completely agree with you on that. I'm glad we're on the same page, Nick Gusbondy. All right, Nick,
I'm
going to ask you this. As we look ahead to the next season, listen, I know a lot of people are pointed out up into the Bay Area, Northern California, and those vaunted San Jose Sharks. I get it. But I wanted to ask you, who is the biggest threat in the West to the Vegas Golden Knights, in your opinion?
Well, I think, obviously, the San Jose Sharks, there's now an incredible rivalry there based on what happened in Game 7 around 1. But I would also say now, with the trades and the way things have shaped up, you're going to have to look out for the Colorado Avalanche as well. I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. I think that, you know, them picking up Belmar and some of the other trades they made in the offseason certainly make them a threat in the West now. So I would be very wary of the Colorado Avalanche, and certainly it's going to be a very heated rivalry with the San Jose Sharks all year.
All right, I'm going to end on this. We started talking about Subban. We're going to end about talking about Subban yesterday. Malcolm Subban inks a one-year deal, $800,000+ to stay with the Golden Knights. I believe Tyler told me yesterday that is 70th in the league for goalies. So you're talking he's even past the backup goalies in terms of your general A-plus or your highest level backup goalies for pretty much every other team. Subban's essentially outside that realm. For me, Nick, this almost feels like a steal. I really want to make sure that Subban gets more looks next year, because I think this young man really thrives well, as most goalies do, with some semblance of consistency, Nick.
Hey, listen, it's a steal. Malcolm Subban is a very good goaltender.
Right.
I think in a lot of his starts last year, the boys, for whatever reason, just didn't play great in front of him. But he certainly knows what he's doing, and I think the fact that he gets to still be involved in this organization is awesome and well-deserved because his development is going to continue. He's a sponge for what he picks up from Fleury and obviously from the master professor, Dave Pryor. So I think you're only going to see Subban get better, and I think the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights can keep him and have him as Marc-Andre Fleury's backup means very good things. Malcolm Subban is a very good goaltender, very good goaltender, and I would argue that he's even better than the numbers proved last season. So I think it's a steal. I think that they're going to benefit from having him and the consistency and the bond and all of those things and the shorthand that they have with one another. So I absolutely love the fact that he's sticking around. I was real excited to see that the other day.
Yeah, you and me both, Nick Gismondi. And, buddy, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes. You go out, you enjoy the rest of your week, and go enjoy that tennis over the weekend. It sounds pretty cool.
I will. Tune in, would you? It starts on CBS Sports Network on Sunday. So do me a favor, give me a watch, and let me know how I'm doing.
Will do, Nick. Will do, absolutely. You enjoy your time out there, all right?
All right. Thanks, all right, buddy. I can't wait for October. Looking forward to dropping the puck on another season.
You and me both, buddy. All right. Enjoy. Safe flight. There you go. Nick Gismondi.
Thanks, Ryan.
There you go. Nick Gismondi, AT&T, Sportsnet, Rocky Mountain, voice of your Vegas Golden Knights. Good stuff there from Nick. And, there's some disgruntled listeners yesterday on Tyler's show, Nick. They really didn't like me saying that, Gusev would be the more easy piece to trade in a Ryan Reeves situation, right?
I don't think there's really any good answer.
Well, there's
that.
Not. No, but I mean, listen, we saw it already this season, right? Colin Miller, right? He's gone. Eric Haula, he's gone. Tough decisions are to be made. And listen, if you're going to ship off Eric Haula, who is a pretty steady player, and a guy, I understand the injuries. I get that. But Haula's a good player. He's probably still going to be a good player. You dump him in his contract, and you don't go after another skilled, good player like a Nikita Gusev. You don't give him the money that he wants. Listen, I'm telling you, personally, that's a worse move. I would rather see Reeves get moved. And that's the heart, all that stuff aside.
It's a hockey move.
He's making too much money. He's making over $2 million. That's absurd. He doesn't have that sort of output. We like him $2 million a season worth. I get that. Vegas likes him.
But he's not a goal scorer.
He's not particularly fleet of foot in any sort of way. Like he's quick. He can do some things. There's the goal in Winnipeg. I get it.
He's an enforcer. He's a great pillar of the community. He's a great guy.
All those things. But Nikita Gusev is a potential 30 goal scorer.
And he was in the what league was that?
KHL.
Yeah, and he was like the star of that league.
Dominated.
So,
most points ever in the history of the KHL.
So yeah, why would you want to get rid of a potential diamond in the rough?
Yeah, like I said, worst case, he's a 15 to 20 goal scorer, similar to like a Tomas Tatar, who actually had a really good season last year. And then best case, like literally best case, you're talking about a potential Artemi Panarin. Now that is a massive lottery win. If he ends up being an Artemi Panarin, then you're talking about a franchise player making more money than Mark Stone. Because Artemi Panarin, I think, is making in New York now $11 million a year, which is one of the highest paid players in the NHL. But you have a dynamic Russian winger that can score from anywhere on the ice and can set people up. Gusev, on some level, seems to be cut from that cloth, and it's worth it. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I think anybody really, it's worth $4 million for two seasons, $4 million a season for two seasons, thus equaling $8 million. My point is, it's worth it to find out. All right, we're going to continue this Wild Card Wednesday. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I got a story for you. I think it's a story a lot of you have heard. Apparently, there is a viral sensation of heathens, I'm talking to you, America, going out and licking ice cream in the store, filming it, and then putting the ice cream back on the shelf. This is what Wildcard Wednesday was made for. We'll be right back.
Pay that man his money.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Everything goes viral these days. Kids don't even want to be famous anymore. They don't even care about going to Hollywood. Becoming athletes. They just want to go viral or become like YouTube streamers. It's like one or the other. Now, apparently, a new viral craze is sweeping America, and that viral craze is licking ice cream and putting it back on the shelf for others to consume. A teen in Louisiana was arrested for it. Another in Texas. and it's centering around a company that was in the news just a few years ago, Blue Bell Ice Cream. They had a listeria outbreak in 2015. Now, apparently Blue Bell doesn't, I don't know, they don't put protective seals on their ice cream. They use like a freezing technique where it's hard to open the top. You guys know what I'm talking about. You feel that suction when you pull it open, and then there's that nice big glob of ice cream there waiting for you. Then others, they use the protective seal. You crack it, you have to like take off the plastic outside and you pop it open, or you've got the little thin plastic sheen that sits above the ice cream. But apparently a couple people have done it, and now people, I guess, feel some sort of way about it, seeing that people get emotional about it, hashtag triggered, whatever you want to call it. More people are doing it. More ice cream licking videos are popping up across the web, and it's really, actually, it's going further. We've got copycat people.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Copycatters out there.
I don't know if I turn that on. No way.
Yeah, copycat people trying to get their viral fame. And then we've got people that are just out of their mind. Of course, this comes from Florida. A Florida woman was arrested after allegedly sticking her unwashed hands in an ice cream scoop at a scoop shop, as well as spitting in the ice cream and urinating in a bucket used to make the homemade ice cream over the course of at least 3 days in June. Of course, this happened in Indian Shores, Florida.
Yeah, I saw that was Florida. I was just like, man, what is up with Florida?
According to police, the woman used the bathroom with the door wide open 5 times and did not wash her hands before walking into the freezer and opening ice cream containers, which she then placed her hands in.
Oh, wow.
She also was seen picking her nose before touching the ice cream and spitting into the containers.
Man, it's a good thing we work in radio and there's no food around here for the most part. I've seen people walk out of our bathrooms and not wash.
What do you mean there's no food? There is food all the time in the break room. In fact, Cofield and I have had long conversations on the air like, would you ever eat the food in our break room? We all do.
Well, yeah.
But I mean, that is a huge risk.
I've eaten a lot of ice cream, even though I'm lactose intolerant. I really don't eat too much, but over the years I have. And I don't recall really any packaging of ice cream ever having some sort of, what is that?
Protective sheen?
Tampering. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
whatever.
They got them. They've got like little pieces of plastic like that you pull open like if you're like a pop top on like vitamins.
Ben and Jerry's doesn't have it.
No, you're right.
Breyers doesn't have it. Dreyer's doesn't have it. I mean, I'm just saying. Anyway, this was brought up by someone else when I was reading about this whole thing. Like, because some people were like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Yeah, yeah. But then I was like, no. Like, did you hear about the Chicago Tylenol murders back in the day?
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't know about that.
That is what ushered in the tamper-resistant.
Yes, the drug tampering, yes. And I didn't know about this. Yep. At first you think, like, okay, she just licked ice cream, whatever. But the mouth is, like they say, one of the most dirty, bacteria-filled things on the human body. And not even just the human body, but, like, many species, like, have cleaner anuses than us, have our mouths. You know what I mean? So we are disgusting when it comes to our mouth. And the fact that you lick something and put it back and then potentially another person gets hepatitis C, whatever it may be. So it at first sounds like it's like a stupid childish prank, like maybe eating the Tide Pods.
That's personal, though.
You want to
be stupid and ruin your body.
Go ahead.
Right.
But this is different because now you're just like this woman who's urinating in the ice cream bucket.
Right. Well, you're also affecting my consumer confidence, which is a very serious issue. Economists have come out and said, listen, if Blue Bell doesn't react to this in a right way, it could create another problem. It's the same as that listeria outbreak. Now, it's not their fault, but I guess the good thing is if this does lead to, like, tamper-resistant, some sort of more safety for the food, I'm okay with it. It just kind of goes back to, like, leave it to a few bad apples to spoil the bunch. That's kind of where we're at.
Well, just like the Tylenol murders back in the day.
Absolutely.
Like 8 people died.
And, I think the Louisiana one, the one that really kicked off this craze where everyone was like, what's going on? It gained fame because the perpetrator who was licking the ice cream was the initial suggestion, I believe, for punishment was 20 years in prison.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which I'm completely okay with.
Lock
him, her up.
That 20 years is too extreme for this simple case. I mean, make an example of her, yes.
Yeah. Well, no, write the headline. Don't actually give her 20.
The next person who does it, slap him harder. But this first person, we just need to be aware that this is a big deal.
Does it escalate to death penalty?
No. Come on.
No?
No. That's,
I don't know, man.
That's extreme.
We're in extreme times, Dick.
How about make them eat so much ice cream like they puke themselves? You know when you're, like you got 50s? Caught smoking cigarettes
yeah,
and your parents?
Like, yeah.
Just eat so much ice cream you are. You never want to eat ice cream in your life.
I don't think that could happen.
Maybe for you, not me.
Yeah, right. All right, coming up tomorrow on the Mac Attack, we are going to be joined by the one and only Cody Decker. He just retired from the game of baseball after hitting a walk-off in AAA. He's going to be joining the show tomorrow. We'll see you then.